I don't know if many of you had an opportunity to listen to or attend a talk that I gave several months ago in Westlake about intensities in gifted kids. If you didn't have a chance to listen to that, or if you didn't attend, you might want to listen to some of that. If you're not familiar with a psychologist Dabrowski's theory of oversensitivities. So this is the idea that gifted individuals have several different areas of oversensitivities or overexcitabilities. That is in the area of intellectual curiosity, emotional intensity, sometimes physical or motor intensities, or walkers or talkers or busy kind of active kids. So having an understanding of that, I think, helps frame a lot of what we're going to talk about tonight. But kind of basically, I think that when we're thinking about gifted kids getting along in a group with their peers or their teachers or their family members, you know, some of the characteristics of gifted kids that show up are things like these kids get really into whatever they're into. If it's something that they're highly interested in, they're like, they don't really just put their toe in, they're like knee deep into it. And so oftentimes it gets very specific too. So like they're not just interested in like walking outside and collecting some rocks and that's kind of cool and I'll put it in a pocket or whatever, but they know like every name of every rock that's ever, well, I guess you wouldn't say invented, right? Just any rock that's out there. And they know how to polish it, and they know how to classify it, and they know all these other things. They're going to correct people if you get it wrong. You can just call it a rock. They're going to call it whatever the specific name of it is. And that a lot of times their peers aren't as into rocks or whatever the interest is as they are. So sometimes that creates a little bit of a challenge. They also tend to want to finish activities that they're engaged in, that they're high interest activities, something that they want to do. If you tell them to clean their room and they're not really interested in their cleaning their room, they're not interested necessarily in finishing that activity. But if they're reading a book, or they're building something with their Legos, or they're doing something that they're highly motivated to do, they often want to see that activity through to the end. Depending on the age of your child and their peers, many kids don't have that kind of attention span. You know, they'll come up with an idea like, let's build a fort or something like that. We're going to build a fort outside, and they'll start building the fort. And the kid who's like really into building the fort, they want to see that fort in its completion, and they're going to continue building that fort until it's done. Whereas some other kids, they might start to get a little bored of it. Or, oh, this is running into some complications, it's not quite what we expected, but this is good enough, now let's go play tag. And they want to move on. And sometimes those gifted kids are like insisting, no, we started this, we got to finish it, and that's not really going with the flow of the group, and so that can cause some friction sometimes. We also notice that gifted kids have these very strong visceral memories, and so when it comes to peer interactions, I think what we see there is sometimes like grudge holding, you know, and expecting their peers to, well, they always get their way, or they always, or they never do what I want to do. And they're holding on to a very specific memory of some sort of negative interaction with that kid or with other adults sometimes too, and they're like, they can't get past that. So they just kind of, they're not really seeing the opportunity or this is a new playdate. They're kind of hung up on what happened before. And that might not be playdates, that could also be like in school, at recess, or working on a group presentation, a group project, you know, and that those kids, I always have to do all of the work or something like that. And so they can't get past that sometimes. Then this kind of operating on another level, that sort of gets to what I was talking about with the, you know, understanding all different types of rocks and how to classify them and all of these very specific technical details. Sometimes other kids that age just aren't really functioning at that level. This comes up a lot with verbal abilities. So I was just talking to a kid the other day who was relaying a situation that happened at school, and she felt very badly because somebody said that she called this other kid dumb. And she says to me, I never called her dumb. And she was relaying the story of what happened, and in some, you know, she used big words that the kid didn't understand, and so the kid felt dumb. This girl never called her dumb, but the kid felt dumb, and then kind of took that and told other people she's calling them dumb. It's sort of that kind of, sometimes it can come across as kind of pedantic or condescending or something, but that's just this kid's natural way of speaking. She's not trying to be pedantic or condescending. She's just explaining something in the best way that she knows, and the best way that she knows is very specific, exact language. All right, so then also our gifted kids tend to be very sensitive and emotional. So while we might be incredibly bright and knowledgeable about very specific details and facts about some kind of obscure something or other, and they operate like a college professor or something in some levels, on another level, they wear their heart on their sleeve, and they kind of crumble, you know? And so sometimes they might be more immature than some of their peers. They can't handle some of the frustrations as their peers. Oftentimes, there are more things that are frustrating to them, just more opportunities to be frustrated because they can kind of see a finished product and they want to finish that product, but maybe their friends are like moving on. They're finished building the fort. They want to do something else, so that's an opportunity to be frustrated. And those kids, a lot of times, play days end in that kid, like, either by themselves, mad, having a tantrum, or, you know, just leaving, going home, not wanting to be with that friend anymore, or the friend asking, like, can you call my mom tell her to come pick me up because I'm not having a good time anymore. But that sensitive and emotional piece, that carries on beyond that play date or that interaction at school, because oftentimes those kids are then thinking about it for the rest of the day or the rest of the week or whatever. It's hard for them to move on. And when I talk about kind of skipping down one, that highly perceptive and intuitive, these are kids who, this is not always very even and across the board. These are kids who can be, they can really pick up on like the vibes of another person sometimes. They can kind of tell if they're going to like someone or not. But what I notice happening sometimes with peers is that, and when they're engaged in these sort of like emotional interactions with another kid their age, is that when their emotions are involved and they're in the midst of it, that ability kind of goes out the window. And what they end up doing is sometimes noticing a little detail and thinking about it, and it spirals. And so that now they're some sort of interaction that was just kind of ambiguous or just sort of a neutral comment or something from up here, now they're reading all of this stuff into it, and they're sort of assigning a bigger meaning to it. And then, remember about their very strong memories, now they're kind of keeping on to that memory, and it creates sort of this buildup of negative interactions with peers sometimes. But that they have really good ideas, you know, that's sort of like a, kids like to play with people who have really good ideas. So that's really a strength for a lot of our kids. But what happens is sometimes they, and I can't blame them because oftentimes their ideas are better than their friends' ideas, or their teacher's ideas, or their parents' ideas, but they have a really hard time of like, throwing someone a bone or letting them kind of believe that they're incorporating their ideas. And that's something when we talk about skills and strategies, sometimes that's what we teach kids to do. It's like, you can just be a little bit savvy about how you get your idea out there. Do you guys remember that movie, The Big Fat Greek Wedding, or My Big Fat Greek Wedding? And they were talking about how, like, the women were talking about, oh, you just have to have the men believe it's their idea, you know, and then they'll go along with it. It's kind of that skill that we sometimes have to work on helping our kids cultivate. But, so those really good ideas, sometimes that kind of comes across as like bossy, you know, instead of being a good leader. And so we help our kids learn how to be a good leader as opposed to bossy, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But then, another thing is that oftentimes, and this can sometimes with kids who aren't really that interested in playing with other kids or hanging out with other kids, is that their own internal world is so interesting and rewarding that they don't really have a need for other people. That they are perfectly happy coming up with their own ideas, thinking through their own games, entertaining themselves, occupying themselves with their interests, and they're in control when it's just like themselves, their own minds that they're working with. When they have to try to figure out how to throw someone a bone and let them believe it's their idea or whatever, that's a lot of work, and that can be kind of tiring sometimes. So sometimes it's rewarding just doing your own thing, and it can be sort of punishing in some ways having to try to get along with other people. So that can be an issue. Gifted people often just kind of look at a problem and see it a little bit differently. They approach the world if you learn anything about like assessment and doing testing and things like that, over the years you kind of collect a bank of like, these are sort of typical responses. And I don't really do the Rorschach very often, but do people know what the Rorschach looks like? It's like those ink blots, right? So part of the Rorschach is there are very normal, kind of regular responses to what those ink blots look like. There's a very common response pattern. There are certain response patterns that are just not that common. And for me, when I'm not doing the Rorschach, but when I'm doing other kinds of tests, whether it's IQ tests or even just having a conversation with a kid and trying to problem solve, it blows my mind sometimes that like when they explain something, it's not at all the way I was thinking about it, you know? And that kind of unique perspective can be a huge strength, but when you're trying to do like a group presentation and everybody else is kind of naturally being led towards one decision or one path, and you're naturally kind of looking at a different part of the problem, ends up making you feel very different a lot of times. And that feeling of not fitting in can create a lot of problems for some of our gifted kids, and we will talk about that. And gifted kids tend to be very high energy. They're walkers, they're talkers, they're movers, they're a lot. A lot of just movement and ideas, and they tend to chatter, and that can wear people out sometimes. It probably, if you've got a kid who's high energy, it probably wears you out. And so you can kind of understand that sometimes it might wear out their peers as well. All right, but sometimes gifted kids run into problems because they want, not all gifted kids, of course, we're not gonna try to like lump every, just because you're gifted, you're exactly the same as every other gifted person. But many gifted people, most gifted people, I would say, tend to want to be liked by a group, whether it's a lot of people or just a handful of people. They want to have meaningful social relationships, and they want to be seen as a good person. And so oftentimes what they do is they go to what they know. And so if at home with their parents or their grandparents or their teachers or whatever, people are impressed by how much they know and how smart they are, sometimes that's kind of what they go to with their peers. You know, they want to like explain things or kind of show that they're smart because that's what they've been getting a lot of praise for over their life. That comes across to their peers as being a know-it-all, you know, or kind of, and so that can come sometimes create problems for our gifted kids too. The other thing is that sometimes gifted kids, they're like, okay, getting along with people, I've got these memories of all these sort of negative interactions and it just doesn't go very well. So you know what, I'm gonna sort of put up a wall or I'm gonna push people away before they have a chance to hurt me because I'm very sensitive and very emotional and I feel very deeply, and when someone does something that bothers me, it hurts a lot. So I would rather just not open myself up to that. All right, so then I think where gifted kids are also oftentimes very, very aware, so that feeling of not fitting in or that recognition that these interactions go south, You know, there are problems, kind of repeated problems over and over again, and they're looking for an answer. They want an explanation, and they want to understand why. And so oftentimes they come to this conclusion of, like, something is wrong with me. And they may hear that from their peers. They may hear that, you know, you're such a know-it-all, or, like, why do you always have to ask so many questions? That was another one kid, a teenager, was telling me that she just felt like there was something wrong with her because she needed to ask so many questions. And I was like, what do you mean? She said, well, I don't know, somebody was telling me about something that happened in their day or their family or whatever, and, like, I didn't understand how it could have happened the way she said, so I kept asking, like, well, wait, what do you mean? You know, well, how did that happen? Well, wouldn't it have been this way? And it came across as kind of argumentative, I think, and sort of like she didn't believe her friend, but really she was just trying to have a deep understanding of the situation. But time and time again, those kinds of situations, she's like, something's wrong with me. I'm the kind of person that people don't like. And this whole idea of, like, what level am I on anyway, that kind of somebody's operating on a different level, many times gifted people, as I mentioned, their like, intellectual abilities may be very well developed, but their emotional abilities might be right in line with their peers, or maybe even more immature than their peers. Or their physical development might be, like, their motor skills, their athletic abilities might be right in line with where they are or behind their peers, or ahead of their peers, and now they're annoyed that their peers aren't, like, performing at their expectations, or, you know, they can't keep up, their peers can't keep up, they're getting frustrated, things like that. But so it's this kind of internal stress of recognizing that I am not performing at sort of my peak across the board. You know, this is hard for me. And so recognizing that can create this feeling of, like, what is wrong with me? Okay, so in terms of what do we do to support the social development of our gifted kids, I think that probably what I would say is the most important thing that we can do to support our gifted kids is to help them find their people, you know, to help them find, and to help them find sort of a committee of people, not just one person, but their people. Those people are probably going to be some people who can satisfy that intellectual curiosity. You know, somebody who's going to take them to the museum to look at all the different rocks, or take them to the library, or, you know, support their book addiction or whatever it is, you know, and they're maybe going to have some peers who are more on their emotional level. So sometimes that is. Sometimes gifted kids prefer to play with children or adult children much older than them, or adults, or children much younger than them. And it may be that that's because they're looking for, okay, this person kind of fits my emotional level, or when I'm playing with these younger kids, I get to be the leader because I have these good ideas, and younger kids are pretty used to following an older kid. You know, so sometimes that works, and parents get really concerned, like, is that a problem that my kid always wants to play with younger kids? I don't necessarily think that's a problem, but what I encourage parents to do is sort of step back and look at, is my kid getting their needs met from a bunch of different people? You know, like, maybe playing with the younger kids on the street helps them satisfy sort of these needs on this level. Maybe help, you know, signing them up for Destination Imagination or whatever their enrichment program or whatever it is, maybe that helps them satisfy their needs on another level. I think that who are your people? Your people are people who get you. So it is very, very, very important for gifted kids to develop relationships in their life with someone who understands them. And when a gifted kid, whether they're listening to a talk or they're reading a book about gifted kids, or they're talking to another gifted kid, or they're talking to a grown-up who gets it, and they hear someone, like, verbalize what they're thinking or feeling, they're like, yes, that is exactly it. And you can see them sort of feel like, that that was a problem with me. And when they understand that, no, this somebody gets that, somebody else understands that you're not alone, that can be very relieving for them. And people who enjoy being around me. I do think that gifted kids are, they have very contagious feelings, and they have very intense feelings, and so when they're happy, they're like the best people to be around because they're so excited, they're so passionate, and they just, it like exudes from them, and for me at least, I feel it too. I feel what they're feeling, and it like makes me get excited about those things that they're excited about. And when they're mad or frustrated, it really makes you probably feel mad and frustrated too, because they're kind of digging in or whatever it is. But they tend to get that kind of reaction from adults to sort of mirror their own strong feelings. And so when you have people who enjoy being around you, people who just like to hear your stories, you know, if gifted kids are walkers and talkers, they are oftentimes the chattiest kid in a room. And they hear often, can you just stop talking for a little bit? I'm tired. You know, like listening to you talk is tiring. And so if they have somebody who likes to hear them talk or who lets them talk and enjoys hearing them talk from time to time, that those are good, those are their people. So you want to make sure you keep those people around. But I do think Sarah mentioned in the intro about parents talking about how sometimes they have a hard time telling other people that their child is gifted. If you kind of think for a second about, like, if you're going to tell somebody that your child is gifted, how do you feel when you're about to have that conversation? What kinds of feelings do you have?
Awkward.
Hesitation. So you're like aware that this person might have some sort of reaction towards my news or whatever I'm sharing, and sometimes it's going to be supportive, and sometimes they might be kind of maybe critical or judgy or something.
Right.
And I think, I mean, I think sometimes parents almost have this kind of like, when you said awkward and hesitation, that sort of like, well, he's in the gifted program. Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, like, it's almost like you have to like just sort of sneak it in there, kind of. You want to make sure you're not, you don't want anyone to think you're bragging, right? And it feels kind of awkward because it feels like you're saying this is like a good thing. I mean, they're called gifted. That's a good thing, but it feels kind of weird talking about it. And sometimes people feel very proud. You know, there are some kids who like, and parents who, when I meet them, that's one of the first things I hear about their kid is that their child is gifted. You know, and it's said sort of as this very, like, kind of badge of honor, you know, sticker on the back of the car, like, my child's gifted, sort of thing, which is fine sometimes. But the other thing I hear from parents a lot is, well, we just kind of want to know if he's gifted. Not that it matters. You know, and they, like, really want to make sure I know. It doesn't matter. I mean, I am going to love this kid, no matter if they're gifted or not, if they're average, if they're above average, if they're gifted, I still don't. And it's this kind of like, but whatever the reaction is, it's just striking to me that we don't have this sort of reaction when we're telling somebody like, oh, my child plays soccer. You know, my child's a soccer player, or my child's a third grader, or whatever. We don't have this sort of emotion tied to it. But the other thing is, we also know that other people have reactions to our gifted kids. When other adults know that your kid is gifted, these gifted kids hear things sometimes like, you're not so smart now, are you? You know, like if they make a mistake. I think Conan O'Brien did a thing, I think he went to Harvard, and he did a thing about how, like, the worst thing about going to Harvard is anytime you ever make a mistake, you go like, oh, that's what Harvard gets you, right? You know, and like, and that these kids, they experience that. Or they experience this, like, you're bragging. You know, stop bragging about being gifted. And so that is, thanks, Sarah. So they have that, and then there's these expectations that, well, if he's so gifted, he should be able to control himself. He should be able to understand that people don't like it when he does this or does that. So those expectations can sometimes be kind of impossible to meet. All right, going back to that, people who enjoy being around you and trying to make sure our kids are at least have some people who enjoy being around them on a regular basis. We want to make sure those are people who accept your child for who they are and without a whole lot of expectations. You know, without this, like, you've got to be mesmerizing me with your brilliance all the time. That sometimes kids just like things that regular old kids like too. They think poop jokes are funny too, and that's fine. You can, you know, laugh about poop or whatever because you're a kid also. You don't have to be so grown up all the time. But people who listen, you know, and who let you chatter and talk about things and express ideas, people who choose to be around you. So that's something that when I think about this fitting in, these are kids who oftentimes just feel like they don't fit in. And when we're talking about young kids, one guy I work with, he's a young adult now and he's doing really, really well, but one of the things he talked about was he remembered in preschool he would go to, like, they had different centers of things to play with, and he didn't care what he played with, he would just go to the center where no one was, and he would go there and he would start playing with stuff, and whatever he was doing was, like, so cool and entertaining that it just sort of drew other people over there. And as soon as, like, other people would come over to that center, he would just move to an empty center and do that, and kids would sort of follow him around, but he was kind of just happier on his own. And so that's something that I think we always have to consider, is this fitting in, is it something that is, like, does it bother me, or does it bother my child? There are many, many gifted kids who do feel really deep pain about not fitting in, but then there are other gifted kids who are like, I'm fine. I like me. I like what I'm doing. I like the fact that my teacher likes to hear about this stuff, or my neighbor, you know, likes to hear about this. I garden with my neighbor, and he lets me talk to him and all this stuff, and, you know, those kids, they don't necessarily feel like they need to have more of a social group of their same age peers. And so that's something that I think it's important for you to be thinking about, is like, is my kid coming home upset that they want to have more connections, or is this me thinking that maybe they should be interested in things that their same age peers are more interested in? But sometimes giving a little bit of perspective, just helping our kids see that, especially, this comes up oftentimes in those, like, tween and teen years, is it is kind of the normal thing for tweens and teens to be interested in things that you might think are kind of shallow or not that important. Like, you're kind of thinking about other stuff. And a lot of the kids that I work with, especially girls, I'll say, like teenage girls, they want to be a part of the group, but they don't really want to like have to do the stuff that group is doing. Like, they sit at lunch and they listen to what these kids are talking about, and they're like, yeah, I can't have a real conversation about that because it doesn't actually matter, but I kind of don't want to be left out, you know? And so they just sort of feel like there's no good spot for them. And helping to give a little bit of perspective, I mean, I feel like I have this conversation with kids a lot, that sometimes kids are, like, their best friends are in high school. Some people are, like, high school people. That's the best time of their life, and they have a great time in high school. Some people meet great friends in college. Some people meet great friends when they're adults, you know? Like, this isn't the only time of your life. And you try to help them see that there's a lot more there and that they have a lot more opportunities. And you also try to help them see the connections that they do have, the people who are choosing to be around them, the valuable relationships that they already have around them, to help sort of protect them from those potentially kind of depressing thoughts about, like, I don't matter to people. I don't fit in with people. Another thing that I think is probably more, I guess, concrete is putting them to work. And so this is something that, I think for all kids, but also gifted, I don't know if I would even say especially gifted kids, but this feeling of fitting in and that you are needed, because you play an essential role in your family or in your neighborhood or in some larger community, because it's your job to take out the garbage, you know? And if you didn't take out the garbage, our house would have a lot of garbage in it. Like, it could be menial tasks. It doesn't have to be, you're going to balance my checkbook or something. Well, who balances their checkbook now anyways? I don't know anyone who does that. If you do, you're probably an accountant or something. I don't know. But you know, just some sort of like clear your bowl from the table. You know, take out the garbage, put away the laundry. Those kinds of chores that help people to realize that I am a part of a larger group, and my job helps this family run smoothly. And this kind of connects with helping them find a purpose. Finding, you know, what is the passion for your kid? And so, are they interested in animals or something? Well, figure out, you know, can they help somebody on the street let their dog out or walk their dog or pick up the dog poop in their neighbor's yard or whatever it is? But figuring out, like, how they can matter in a very concrete, simple way to other people. Okay, so one question that I think a lot of times parents are asking me is, like, how do I find gifted kids for my kids to play with? And Sarah mentioned the parent match. That's a great thing to do with Connecting for Kids, is find another family like yours who your kid might have some interests in common with and develop those friendships. But the other thing is, I think, you know, maybe your child likes to play with other gifted kids. Maybe that helps satisfy that intellectual curiosity or the depth or something. But sometimes two gifted kids playing together can really butt heads, you know, because they want to, they're equally have good ideas, and they're equally emotional or whatever, intense and things like that. And so sometimes that doesn't go so well. Other times it's fantastic, and they finally feel like there are other people who get them. I think what's really important is finding this sort of committee of loosely defined peers. I think, I don't know if anybody ever watched Grey's Anatomy, but there was a scene in Grey's Anatomy where they always talk about, like, you're my person, you're my person. And I think that's kind of a romantic idea. When we're talking about gifted kids, they're probably not going to have one person who is going to satisfy all of their needs for social connections. And their loosely defined peers may include, like I mentioned, you know, a neighbor who they garden with, or a teacher, or the school librarian who talks to them about the books they're interested in, or, you know, a friend's parent. That guy I told you about who went from center to center to center to center, he told me that, yeah, he had a couple friends in high school, but he really just enjoyed talking to their parents, like when he'd be at their house, you know? And the kids were fine. He played video games with them. He liked playing video games. But when it came to conversations, he enjoyed his richer conversations with their parents. So those are kind of like the committee of peers, you know, a teacher, a mentor, a coach, whatever. Whoever satisfies that criteria of enjoying your kid, liking to be around them, accepting them, and helping your child see that, you know what, part of you fits in with a lot of different people. This part of you fits in really well with your soccer team. This part of you fits in really well with your librarian. This part of you fits in really well. And that's kind of cool, because you have all these people that you matter to, you know, and helping them kind of get that sense. And when I say get creative, look around, that's obviously, you know, the librarian, the neighbor, things like that. Many kids have imaginary friends until they're pretty old, and sometimes stop admitting it to people, but they still kind of hang around, and that's okay. That's not a problem, you know, and that's that sort of internal world being really satisfying and rewarding. And that imaginary friend can be on this committee of loosely defined peers. Okay, some of the skills, though, that I think are important to help teach our kids are things like perspective taking, so trying to imagine and empathy, you know, trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes and imagining kind of what that sounds like. So I mentioned to you about the girl who was using vocabulary that was hard for her classmate to understand, and the classmate kind of took that as like, you're calling me dumb. And she was very hung up on, the fact is, I didn't call her dumb, so why is she telling people that I called her dumb? but kind of helping her to put herself in that kid's shoes and realize, oh, you might feel kind of dumb if someone your age is using all these words you don't understand. You might feel kind of like you're not as smart or something. I always clarify that with, I'm not telling you you should change. I don't think you necessarily need to stop using that language. I just want to help you understand what it might feel like for that person and why they might have had that reaction. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to change the way you talk, or that you can change the way you talk all the time. But helping them to sort of see that perspective, and then helping them learn to read the room, helping them learn a little bit of cues or signals, things like that, when somebody's not that interested in listening about like your rocks and stuff like that. How can you tell? And oftentimes, kids will learn, and adolescents and adults can learn to read, okay, I've bored somebody now, you know, or I've offended somebody, or I interrupted them, or whatever. They recognize it after the fact. And so we teach things like social repairs. You teach just a phrase or two that kind of smooths over the situation. So, for example, if you've got a kid who gets like so excited about their own ideas, and they maybe interrupt a lot, when they realize that they just interrupted somebody, you teach them to say, oh, I'm sorry I interrupted you. What were you saying? You know, so that it's almost like a rewind or a redo. And it shows this, it's, you know, you're taking perspective, you're figuring out, like, I've done something to kind of annoy someone, and now I'm going to apologize for that, or I'm going to accept, you know, I'm going to be accountable for it, and I'm going to try to make up for it. And then frustration tolerance is a big one, because so a lot of gifted kids, you know, for many, many reasons, get frustrated easily and sometimes have a hard time dealing with that frustration. So that's a skill that we, for not just getting along with peers, but that frustration tolerance is an important skill to develop. So there's a lot of work out there about like growth mindset, and helping kids kind of recognize the process and the efforts and things like that, as opposed to the outcome. Those kinds of things are important. But also, I think teaching kids that there's a middle ground by just you, the adult, like taking the middle ground, sticking to the middle ground. So sometimes there are kids who, let's say this kid is getting so angry and upset that they're stomping and kind of flailing around, and they accidentally break something. They didn't intend to break whatever it was that they broke. And once it's broken, they feel really bad, like almost kind of horrified that they couldn't really control their reaction like that, and they broke this thing. And so sometimes those kids start to feel really, really bad about themselves. And they're like, I'm the worst kid ever. I don't even deserve to be alive. I shouldn't be in this family. Don't give me any Christmas presents. And they're just they go to this very negative place. And then sometimes the adults, we don't like to hear our kids say, I shouldn't be alive. I don't want any Christmas presents. You know. And so then we're kind of like, no, honey, it's okay. You know, you didn't need to do it. It's all right. And we go to like the really comforting side. But then those kids sometimes when we're like, but you know, okay, so you did break this and that was kind of important to me or special to me, like, what do you think you could do to make it up to me? And they're like, I just want to forget about it. Okay, let's act like it didn't happen. You know, so they just kind of want to like avoid it and not think about it, not feel it. And so, and sometimes we get annoyed with them and angry or upset about that, kind of like, maybe it sort of feels kind of like they're not being very thoughtful or considerate. One of the things that I think we want to do as adults is, okay, so you broke that. That's not good. But, like, you're not the worst kid ever, and you got to figure out how to fix it. But we just kind of act, like, a little bit nonchalant about it, and if you need to, walk away. You know, you're just going to try to stick to that middle ground. And if you feel your kid going in one direction or the other, you sort of try to be that anchor in the middle to help them see it doesn't. We don't always have to operate in extremes. And we're also talking about compartmentalizing and teaching things like person, place, or time. So some gifted kids that I work with, they're you know, very matter of fact, and they they don't have a lot of tolerance for things that they think are like pointless or boring or nonsense or, you know, too politically correct or something like that. And so they do a lot of like pointing that out. And in certain situations and around certain people, it's totally acceptable. Around other people, it can kind of get them into trouble sometimes. Like even if you think about holidays and political discussions, like there are certain, you know, it's not really polite to talk politics in certain company, we've learned. And that's the kind of thing that we want to teach our gifted kids too, is that some those people who love being around you, enjoy being around you, accept you for who you are, however you are, yeah, have at it. Like, say all that stuff, all those observations. Let those people know all those stuff. They want to hear that stuff. But there are some people who you kind of keep it on a shallow level. Like, you kind of keep it surface. And then you help them understand those sort of different levels of people, those people who want to hear and who you want to share different levels of information with. Talk about the leadership versus bossiness. So helping kids, and when I say appeal to the pursuit of facts, because this is just one thing that, you know, you sort of flip a coin and you think about, okay, so how could this be perceived by kids? It could be perceived by others as bossy, but it's also like, shows some pretty good leadership qualities. But I think about, this is where being a psychologist comes in handy for me, but if you ever, you know, if you read things, if you watch TED Talks, if you hear something, if you remember something from a social psychology class, you're in business or whatever, share the kinds of stuff that you learn about good leaders. I just read this article about good leaders. Good leaders, they do things where their team feels really engaged or whatever. And so you can talk about research. You can talk about things like that. Maybe not necessarily when you're trying to directly have a conversation with them about their own social interactions, but just kind of in general, you're sharing information about that. And then I think something that's really important is recovery. So if you've got a gifted kid who maybe does prefer their internal world and sort of feels like being around other people is kind of hard work, making sure that they do understand that about themselves and that they build in a period of recovery for themselves, a little rest time or a little downtime afterwards, because they're just kind of burnt out. It's a lot of energy keeping track of everybody else's feelings and things and their, you know, their perspectives and trying to manage your own behavior and things like that. That can be tiring. And so how do you take a little break afterwards doing some of the activities that are a little bit more calming and relaxing for you? So in terms of resources, Sarah mentioned many of the resources that Connection for Kids has for you. I'm a psychologist with a practice in Rocky River. I've got other therapists in my office. We do assessments and individual family therapy, group therapy. We've got a website and newsletter and things, articles, but I am really excited about something that I've been wanting to do for a really long time, which is having a book club for some of our gifted tweens. I love to read, and I find myself having a lot of conversations and individual therapy with kids about books that they've read and kind of connections that they make to their own life about books that they've read. So I thought, well, we should maybe get a group together with some of these kids and they can talk about some of these issues with like-minded peers. So that's something that I haven't fully developed, but if you're interested in that, you've got a kid in that age range, please reach out to me and let me know, I've got a girl or a boy or whatever that age, and we would like to do that, and kind of here's our availability, and I'm going to just put the group together based on who reaches out to me and says, I want to do that. We'll schedule it that way. But we've got some time for questions, so who's got a question?
So a parent asked, how do I correct my child in a way that leaves them open to actually hearing the criticism?
So this is something that I would say, this is just how I talk to kids and teenagers, regardless of their cognitive ability. But I never say, this is what you're doing. It's more like, I kind of wonder, like, I noticed that might happen. Do you think it could be blah, blah, blah? So I just really kind of, I ask more questions. And then usually what happens with a kid is they want to explain. So if you said, for example, like, I noticed that what a lot of the kids, you know, like play dates kind of end with people storming out of our house and slamming the door. You know, like they've got a go bag ready. I think this kind of play dates end that way. Like, what do you think is going on? You know, I don't know. Does it seem like, do we not think so much about what they want to do? Or like, what's happening? You're just kind of asking questions that saying, you know, you always want to do what you want to do, and other people like to do what they want to do. So you start the conversation by asking questions, and then I think you can guide it a little bit more into what you're noticing. So, like, I noticed you have these really good ideas, and it seems like your friends always are kind of into it at the beginning, and then I can see they're sort of, like, hungry for a snack, or then they notice, like, your Legos over there, and they kind of want to maybe try that, but you're like, sort of, I want to do this. You know, what do you notice? What's going on there? And then you kind of continue the conversation that way. Other questions?
Another parent asks, what do you do when your older gifted child decides that they don't really like the idea of being gifted anymore?
I think that's very common in teenagers, which is why I think, you know, and I'm not saying that like all hope is lost or anything like that, but that's why I think the sooner the better. We lay the groundwork with your people, and all these different people, this sort of community, because when somebody's 16, they're a lot less likely to be open to those sorts of committees and recognizing it. But I think that feeling of, I wish my brain didn't really work this way. I wish I could do things this way. The way I tend to handle those conversations is a lot of validation and a lot of, that is kind of hard when you're surrounded by people who think this and this is cool or whatever. But I don't know, I kind of, and then I try to be sort of like, I'm just kind of dropping it in there, but sort of like, I don't know, I mean, sometimes when you talk about blah, 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 I guess I sort of see how that could be probably a good thing. You know, maybe not always in high school, but I could see how that would probably be good for you, like, in other areas, like this or this or this or this. And so I just try to kind of, with that perspective, you know, help them see a little bit more of that perspective.
A parent asks, how do I help my older gifted child socialize when they prefer more isolated activities like being on the internet?
When I talk about the committee of like loosely defined peers and I say like get creative and look around, this is kind of a controversial subject, I think, like online friends. And besides working with gifted kids, I work with a lot of kids who have autism, and so like the online world is pretty appealing for both groups of kids or sometimes kids who are maybe have autism and are gifted. Because I'm not a digital native, I guess, I get kind of nervous about online friends. Like, how do you know if they're real people? Have you ever met them? Are they dangerous? You know, and I get kind of like anxious about that. But I've done a lot of talking with adults who have autism and just kind of hearing the benefits of these online friends and how. And not even just adults with autism, but I would say older adolescents and young adults who can give me some perspective on sort of the needs that those friends satisfy. And I think finding that connection is really important for these kids. So a 14-year-old, you know, I think when you're talking about sort of social media or online world, you do want to be aware of who they're talking to and what's going on and things like that. So I think you have to have kind of this level of monitoring or supervision or just an openness about who you're talking to and also helping them understand safety, you know, online safety kinds of things. But I think it's really beneficial to talk with kids about their online friends just the way that I encourage parents to talk with their real life friends who maybe parents don't think are necessarily the best influence. Like, well, what are some of the things you like about them? Or what are some, you know, tell me what do you like the most about hanging out with this person? What do you like the most about chatting with those people online? So it's not that you're saying those aren't real friends. You should get some real friends. You know, it's helping to understand what it is, what needs those friends are satisfying.
Another parent asks, what do you do when your gifted child doesn't really like the company of other children, but instead prefers the company of other adults or you, their parent?
You talk about sort of like, I like being around you too. I think you're cool too, and I like listening to this stuff. But I think I would have a conversation probably with him about, like, what is it that you don't like about these kids? And what do you like about me? And then let's figure out, like, I still want to hang out with you, but are there other people who you might also like to hang out with too? You know, and kind of maybe they're not his, and it sounds like he's got a wall up about people his own age, so I'm thinking about, you know, getting creative. Obviously, when I talk about that, I don't mean just like, you know, set out a classified ad, like, you know, 9-year-old gifted boy looking for people to hang with. Like, you're not going to do that, but you're going to try to just, you know, if there's a neighbor who, like, you know, thinks he's cool or whatever, you know, who you know and you trust and you think is a safe person for him to be around, fostering those kinds of relationships, that kind of thing. Question that, I don't know if anybody here has this question, but one that comes up with parents that I work with is, like, should I look at a school for gifted kids? Or, you know, should I look at, like, should I put my kid in a school like that where they might have some peers? I think it's really an individual kind of thing. I think that some kids fit very, very nicely in a school for gifted kids or a program with other gifted kids. Sometimes kids don't feel like they fit very well in those programs or schools either because maybe they have interests that many of the typical kid there doesn't have. And so they want to maybe have more options for peers and not just be with gifted kids. So that, it just kind of made me think of that question. But any other questions?
Yeah. Another parent asks, how do you navigate giftedness in a family amongst siblings when one child might be highly sensitive and the other child is highly gifted?
I think that the way I usually have that conversation is not necessarily like, your sister's exceptional, because she's gonna hear the other side of that, right? So the way that I kind of soften that, I think, is a little bit of like, everybody has different, you know, we all have like reading abilities in our brain and math abilities in our brain and social and physical and creative and, you know, like giving all kinds of categories. And I would include something that your older daughter does really well. And I would say, you know, some of us are just like natural. I mean, like in my household, my husband's a really natural cook, you know, so like he makes dinner. Everybody likes his dinner better than mine, you know, and I'll say, like, you know, dad just kind of knows how to put stuff together and it tastes good. I don't, you know, I usually forget, like, I made pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving and forgot to put sugar in it, so people aren't really happy with that, but, so you just, I make fun of myself, and I give a lot of examples about, like, our own, you know, different differences, and that some people, they don't really have to work very hard to do well in certain areas, and, you know, when you're doing your reading, and you're trying to figure out a word, and your sister just kind of interrupts with that word, that's because reading just kind of pops in her head without her doing too much work about it. It's kind of like when you get out on the soccer field and you just sort of know where to be, you know, or whatever it is. And you give sort of an example like that, but you can say, but you know, it is also not really very polite when your sister interrupts you when you're trying to do your work. So let's try to figure out how we can help her, you know, see that that's not very polite. So I think it's appropriate to acknowledge that this is something she just kind of naturally does, you know, but I would also point out the things that your older daughter does naturally, because I'm sure there are things she's naturally, you know, pretty good at.